As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Let's get to Laurie Cavasina, the head of US equity strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Laurie, a little bit of a trim to your price target. Let's call it a trim. 4,700 from 4,860. Just walk me through your thinking over the weekend into this week.
Sure. You know, John, I think we've all had the question on our minds, are we headed into a recession or not? And I will tell you that we have 11 different models that we look at, but a fundamental assumption behind all of our modeling is the idea that we're going to see a material slowdown in economic growth that skirt the recession. And so when we do that, we've basically updated our GDP models. We've added in a new valuation test, which was really responsible for a lot of the downgrade to the forecast. But in general, we think that the economic data we're taking the optimistic case here that the Fed will be able to pull this off. But we do think that bond yields essentially have taken a bite out of some of the forward return of the market. We talked about that actually in April. That continues to be the case today. And, you know, Lisa mentioned peak bearishness coming on. That's something else we're modeling in. So we basically look at the recovery off of the low that we had on May 19th and factor in the typical recovery that we see in growth scares. And it's about a 25% type return. AAII, that net bearishness that we've seen there, also tends to give you a bit of a springboard. So while we are factoring in this economic ratcheting down, we do want to take account of the fact that sentiment probably has, you know, hit peak bearishness as well.
Lori, I want to take an individual sell-side report. I know you don't want to talk about individual stocks, and I'm not going to ask you about Amazon, but Ron Josey over at Citigroup publishes on Amazon with a stunning view out 1, 2, 3, 4 years. The EBITDA growth from pre-pandemic is $43 billion out to a present $71 billion out to a window in 24 months of $104 billion. I believe that's growth. You are pounding the table that growth does better is value fades. Discuss that.
So look, I think we also need to just take that economic environment we think we're in and apply it to sector and style positioning. And typically we see that when you exit a hot economy to a cool economy, one that's above growth to below growth or above average to below average in terms of the trend itself, you typically see value seed leadership. Value does well in a hot economy, and you tend to see growth outperform in that cooler economy. Now, defensives would do well in the recession, but we think that's, you know, a risk, but not our base case. And when we look at growth as well versus value, we find that basically the relative valuation multiples are all starting to look reasonable or slightly attractive again. And if you look at the long-term growth expectation between value and growth, it had been sliding. So growth was really coming down relative to value. That tends to drive the relative PE multiple, but we have actually started to see some stability in that relative long-term growth expectation. In other words, investors have not given up on the idea that growth is better than value on the growth front, and that should give some support to the PE multiples here.
So, Lori, what's going to drive the S&P? What's the leadership going to be to get it to 4,700, which is your new target?
So look, we like technology, and I want to stress that we are being very particular and very picky on that broader TIMT trade. So we don't like the communication services sector. We're neutral on consumer discretionary, but we like that classic tech sector where the valuations have gone from being ridiculously overvalued to slightly attractive to neutral, depending on what day we update the model. Earnings revision trends are actually starting to improve for the technology sector again, and it's one of the biggest sources of net income in the S&P as well as market cap. So we think that helps stabilize the market. And if we do have a peak in bond yields here, which is a call our rate strategy team is making, that should all help also help the tech sector stabilize in terms of performance. On the value side, Lisa, I would tell you, look at financials. Got a much better valuation case than what we've got in energy or materials right now. Earnings revisions are positive, but they're not peak-like, which I think they may be starting to look like they are in energy. And we really think that as the market sort of transitions away from the recession fear narrative and towards the slower growth narrative, that can breathe a little bit of life into this financials trade again in terms of a relief.
Laurie, wonderful to get your thoughts as you cut that price target just a little bit. Laurie Cavasina there of RBC.
We are thrilled to bring you Bruce Kasman, chief economist and head of global economic research at JP Morgan, listening all weekend to REO Speedwagon because Kasman and team have been riding the storm out. There's no hurricane. Come on, you guys are diplomatic in your Friday weekly prospects. You pushed against the CEO who's looking for a hurricane. If it's not a hurricane, Bruce, brief Mr. Diamond right now on what's ahead.
Well, I think what we have here is a pretty powerful tension between drags that are not going away and a very resilient private sector, with the health of both households and corporates being quite remarkable right now. I think what we're going to see is growth continue to be on the softer side, but growth continue to show resilience. We don't see a near-term recession. We see a global economy which actually does okay in the second half of the year, with right. The U.S. slowing and the rest of the world doing somewhat better.
What does China do to the U.S.? You call it the audacity of hope. I agree. We have a jump condition in copper this morning, but link in all of your Asia research over to what's happening in the United States.
Well, I think the U.S. manufacturing sector mostly is going to see some softening as a result of what's been happening in China. I think in addition to that, there is every reason to think that higher interest rates, higher energy prices is going to hurt things like the auto sector. We can see that. And we've just been through a really good run for U.S. and global manufacturing on the back of inventory dynamics. So I think industry is going to slow. You know, our basic point is there's no real reason to be worried about a recession. There is some slowing in the picture. But the other thing is that part of the reason we're getting slowing is high inflation. And I think the combination of high inflation and tight labor markets is starting to change the inflation process, which over time is not good for the sustainability of this expansion. So I'm not trying to downplay the underlying dynamics here, which are worrisome, but not about near-term recession risk. I think you'd have to get hit by much bigger shocks to really talk about recession anytime in the next 12 months or so.
Bruce, to one of John's pet peeves that he mentioned this morning, the good news is bad news that we experienced on Friday, that momentum in a labor market highlights how much the Fed has to do. Is that your takeaway from the recent data, that there is nothing to stop the Fed from being more aggressive than the market is currently pricing in?
I think over time that's true. I think the Fed is committed to 250s. If we're right and the economy is slowing towards a 2% pace later this year, there's a good chance they slow the pace down. But ultimately, I don't think what you see in market pricing is going to be consistent with the Fed getting control on inflation, slowing the economy down to something that's going to be weak. And I think ultimately the Fed's going to have to do more. But I don't think the Fed is ready or signaling it's willing to do that much more, I think, in the near term. And I think that's important. The Fed does not want to create a recession right now. The Fed is tolerant of inflation above 2%. So this is going to take time before we get to the point where the Fed really has to hurt us.
So Bruce, when I was reading a lot of the notes over the weekend, there seems to be this distinction drawn between a slowdown and a recession. Is there really some sort of clear-cut distinction here? Or are we basically just parsing words around the same issue, which is how do you price in a loss of momentum?
I think there's a huge difference between a slowdown and a recession. We haven't had a recession in the U.S. without the U.S. unemployment rate rising 2 percentage points or more. Recessions are nonlinear events where corporates are pulling back. So I think we should be careful when we use those terms to make sure we understand that that's what it means. There are a number of different ways the economy can slow. I think it is likely the U.S. economy is slow. I don't think it's likely that we're going to see that kind of break that we've seen that's been notable in recession dynamics.
Bruce, one of the big distinctions of J.P. Morgan is how you parse it out among your team. I know you hang on every word that Daniel Silver writes. And this weekend, he writes about high wage growth. This is a really important concept, and that the new domestic labor economy is skewing again to high wage job growth. Discuss that.
Well, as the pandemic got hit and we saw dislocations in the economy, an important part of the wage gains we were seeing and the elevated wage gains were not tied to the tightness of the labor market. They were tied to the dislocations, and they were unusually skewed towards lower skill job sectors. And now we're seeing, I think, what's more consistent with the tight labor market, wage pressures building, and wage pressures building in particular in sectors of the economy that are high wages. I think the problem the economy has, even as it slows, is that the labor market tightness, the salience of inflation, is starting to affect the wage and price setting process. And I think that's the issue around the sustainability of the expansion that ultimately is going to be a serious problem.
How long can the consumer remain resilient if you don't get wage gains commensurate with inflation, and if you see people eating down into their savings as we have?
Well, first of all, we should realize we are getting wage gains commensurate with inflation. The wage bill, wages and hours together, have been growing at about a 9% pace over the last 6 months or so. So we have been getting that. I think we are going to see slowing in wage income, partly because the economy is slowing. I do think the U.S. household sector has every ability to continue to absorb drags from higher inflation. The question is whether they're going to be willing to, and whether corporates are going to continue to generate that kind of labor income.
Bruce, you're going to hate me. We talk to people in the White House, and we say, when you go into the Oval Office and sit on that gold couch, how does a president take in your economic data? When you wander into Mr. Diamond's office and you have to do a briefing, how does he take in the chasm in economic data?
Well, I think he takes it in, and he's got his own views. I remember quite distinctly in the past that, the leadership of the firm was much more clear cut about understanding dynamics and financial conditions and how they were going to impact on the macro economy. That's something which, as economists, we may not fully appreciate. I think that's one of the issues we have to face right now, is financial conditions are tightening. As we're seeing it, and we give our advice, as we see it, we see the economy slowing. Don't see a financial storm coming right now. And we think the economy is going to avoid recession as we go through the rest of this year.
John, if we go into hurricane season, can we get Kasman in here to do weather reports?
I think Kasman practiced that with PR before coming on, that's for sure. Bruce.
Okay.
Good to catch up, buddy.
In the storm
as always,
out.
Bruce Kasman at JP Morgan. My favorite tweet this morning, the hurricane's been downgraded to a light summer breeze over at JP Morgan.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Helane Becker joins us now. This could be a three-hour interview given the fixation in America on air travel as we come out of the pandemic. Deaths under 300 is a huge, huge deal. Helane, let me get out of the way. Spirit, Frontier, and JetBlue. And to borrow a phrase from CFA Level 4, is this dinosaurs mating? Is this much ado about next to nothing?
Well, we'll see what happens. It's certainly not a done deal in any case because they need regulatory approval and the regulatory hurdles in the current administration are pretty high. So there's no guarantee either deal gets done. Obviously, Spirit thinks they have a better proposal and really are taking to task the Spirit Airlines board of directors and right. management team.
No, Helane, just to get this out of the way, because Lisa's got 47 other questions that really matter. How does Spirit Frontier or JetBlue Spirit, whatever the name's going to be, how do they compete with the juggernauts like United, Delta, and American Air?
Yeah, that's a good question, Tom, and I think that's why they need to merge. I think any airline currently not named American, Delta, or United is having issues attracting and retaining people. And one of the biggest issues is retaining pilots. There were 10,000 pilots that retired in 2020 and 2021. And in order to fly the 2019 schedule, they need to hire that many. Plus, to do any growth that they were anticipating, they need to hire another 20%. So this year alone, the industry needs to hire something like 12,000 pilots. We just don't turn out that many, number one. And number two, the whole idea, I think, behind either merger is really about giving employees and especially pilots more crew bases, more opportunity to fly the schedule, more opportunity to make captain, which is where you maximize your income over the life of your career.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what we're arguing about here. And I think that's why JetBlue is being so aggressive.
Attracting employees is basically the same as saying having to pay them more, not the same, but it's definitely part and parcel of the same story. Helane, given the fact that airlines are having to pay their workers more, they're also facing much higher costs when it comes to fuel. How much pricing power do they continue to have as consumers get crimped in other areas as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we're wondering that ourselves. So here's how we're thinking about it. The summer is sold out. Everybody who was planning to go away in June, July, and August probably bought their tickets in April or May. And certainly airlines themselves have been sounding the alarm on higher ticket prices. There are also flight cancellations. It's really kind of a disastrous summer, I think. I think we're setting up for a really difficult summer from the perspective of operations. But I think we're worried about September and what happens in the fall, because to your point, I heard you say that gasoline prices are $5 a gallon. And we're certainly seeing it cost more and more to fill up cars, especially for those who drive. And airlines have no choice, but as labor costs go up and as fuel costs go up and airport fees are going up, they have huge inflationary pressures. They need to raise ticket prices. And at some point, the consumer is going to say, okay, we did our travel and we're just done. We cannot fly again.
But to that point, Helane, how much does business take over, given the fact that you are seeing more conferences and people are realizing that that FaceTime is really important?
Yes. Well, that's our I don't want to say hope is the strategy, right? But that's what we are thinking about after Labor Day. We are thinking that, okay, leisure travel, which is up about 35 or 40% from 2019 levels, starts to flatten out until the holidays. And then business travel, which to your point is increasing with more conferences, definitely more in-person. There's been so much turnover at companies that you don't know who your clients are anymore. So yes, you have to get out and meet and greet. And so we're hoping that business travel definitely comes back. And then international is the other big one, right? We think international is down about 50-60% still, especially Asia Pacific, which we think will be another couple of years before it comes back because of the uncertainty with COVID. But North Atlantic is going to be good this summer, even with the U.S. still requiring testing.
Well, the testing, I want to go there. We experienced this in real time. Friends in La Quad, the Gulfstream folks. So Lisa and I were flying, you know, the airlines Helene Becker talks about. Why are we the only ones, Helene, with a test to get back into the country? When does that go away?
No kidding. I think it's ridiculous, right? Because you can fly to Toronto or Tijuana or Mexico. Well, Mexico City might not be
practical.
Lisa's
going to Tijuana.
Yeah, you can do that. And then you drive across the land border and you don't have to test. So how insane is that, that you have to, that you cannot fly into the United States without having a pre-departure test? It's just ridiculous. And I've been wrong on this so far. I thought it would go away in March and it didn't. I thought it by May 1st for sure would go away. No, it's still with us. So maybe I'm done predicting when it's going away and just kind of thinking at some point the U.S. has to examine what it is doing and remove that pre-departure testing.
Helene Becker, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks. With Cowan always here on Sprint Frontier JetBlue. I'm going to frame out the math here, and then John's going to pick it up. Vishy Tirupattur joins us now, Global Director of Fixed Income Research at Morgan Stanley. Vishy, if you take the vector and you take the x-axis, you end up at a terminal rate for the 10-year yield. Where is your guesstimate of the 10-year yield terminal rate?
It's hard to say terminal rate. I would say how looking ahead, second quarter of next year, we expect the 10-year rate to be at 3.15%. And we expect when the Fed is done, we think they will be in the, you know, about in the 3 to 3.25% range, the target range is where they will stop hiking, which would put them above what we would consider to be, or generally understood to be, a neutral, which is a somewhat imprecise estimate of 2.5%.
Vishy, if I ask people 2022-23, which year would the high on a 10-year Treasury fall in? Most people would conclude 22. They say that because they'd look ahead to 23 at a deceleration in growth. And I think most people would think yields would be much lower, maybe closer to 2 on a 10-year. What's with the Morgan Stanley view, Vishy? Why do you have this view that we can almost stabilize around 3% as the Fed ultimately attacks growth, tries to bring it lower?
So I think I have some sympathy with that news, with that view. I think the key thing to keep in mind is that while recession risks have certainly gone up, our economist models show that recession risks have gone up just from a few weeks ago, 15%, to now something like 35%. So while the recession risks have gone up, the U.S. recession is still not our base case. So that's first important thing to note, is that U.S. recession is not our base case. And we are suggesting that between now and end of the year, we would be pretty much range bound in 275, 3-ish kind of levels. And so 3.15 is not a tremendously far from this range. So especially with you laying in the idea that we will our base case remains not that of a recession, and that the Fed keeps going to get to significant, you know, at least some points above the neutral rate.
So Vishy, some people would say that a higher long-term interest rate call is pairs well with this idea that the Fed isn't going to be overly aggressive, that they're going to allow inflation to remain well above that 2% target for way longer than a lot of people expect. Do you agree?
So we think that the Fed, including 2023, we don't expect that they will come back to the 2% level of core PC level. So we expect that the inflation will remain above that level through to 2023.
So what does that mean for credit, given the fact that we really saw a rates move for the first part of the year, and now we're looking at something that's looking, to use Tom's word, more nudgy in the credit space? We saw a sell-off of the credit spreads, then you saw a retracement, but now there's starting to be a little bit more concern. Where do you fall?
So we think that it's time, you know, year to date to say maybe about a few weeks ago, it was mainly a duration-driven negative total returns. We think a lot of that is now in price, and we would be careful at this point and move up in the quality spectrum. So we, you know, within the high yield space, we'll move towards double Bs. Where within the investment grade space, investment grade over high yield, that would be our call. Basically, with the notion is that, I want to emphasize this point. that the credit does not have a fundamental problem other than vague, very, very tail part of the credit spectrum. So credit has a valuation problem that we think that compels us to move higher in the quality spectrum.
Sounds like you're also a little bit worried about credit risk, though, Vishy, relatively speaking, to where you were at the start of the year.
Correct. Absolutely. You know, in the starting of the year, we thought we should take default risk over duration risk. That played out. I think at this point, we have taken that preference of default over duration off now. And we think this is the time to move higher in the quality spectrum.
But ultimately, Vishy, you don't think we should be worried about a default cycle kicking up in a big way?
Exactly. I don't think we should be worried, at least in the next 1 month, a spike in defaults that is simply not in our expectation.
Vishy, thank you, as always. Vishy Tirupattur there of Morgan Stanley.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.